Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Queendom of Sage Wisdom Show. Tonight's show is brought to you by Sage Wisdom International. I hope everybody had a great day, and As always, I hope that you are at peace with yourself. Tonight, I have very special guest. I have with me tonight the lovely, incomparable Gloria Coppola. And I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Gloria.
That's fine.
Great. Thank you for being here. And you know what? I don't even want to waste any time because this, you know, when we're on these shows, as the time goes by so fast, and I have so much I want to talk to you about. Your new book, You Were Born to Love, Living a Life with Purpose, fresh off the press, and I am so impressed with this book. It is just absolutely beautiful. So I just want to ask you, how did you start your spiritual journey, and how has it led you to the point where you are now?
Well, thanks, Sage, and I'm happy to be here tonight. So I truly believe that I came in that way in this lifetime. I've always been the different one in the family. You know, we talk about the black sheep in the family and not fitting in. And as a young child, I always had this very profound and deep connection with God. And even going to school, you know, I had spent literally time, spare time when I could have been playing, spent it in service in the convent. And so I believe that that spiritual connection was always there. And then, of course, life sets in and different opinions and belief systems set in as we grow during those formative years. And so things happen, and maybe we get sidetracked a little bit. Maybe we're not so sure. And then maybe something happens along the way that kind of refocuses you and grounds you back in it, you know, maybe for a little while, maybe forever. And when I was about 12, I had an amazing conversation with the priest where I was questioning a lot of things, and it really reminds me of what's happening in this world right now, because I was questioning things like sin and why people do bad things and all of that and, you know, all the negativity. And he had some really wise words for me way back then, even though at 12 I don't think I took it in totally until later on in life. But it was a good intervention for me at that stage in life. And he began to tell me that, you know, we're all born here for a purpose. At 12 years old, we're all born here for a purpose. And that purpose is to, you know, become unconditional, unjudgmental, and compassionate, loving beings. And while that sounded really good, I still had a lot of questions about, you know, all the other things that happened. And he said, you know, young lady, you have to understand there's still bad people in this world. And I thought, he said,
yeah,
there's ill people in this world. There's people that are mentally ill and do things, but everyone is here to teach us a lesson and help us with our purpose. And so, you know, fast forwarding into about my 30s, that message hit home for me. And I believe that was the beginning of me really delving into more of the things that he had shared with me back then, to study philosophies and different religions and go back into ancient times and study, you know, those cultures and all. And so I think that was a huge part of where it all began.
Isn't that amazing? So you're saying at 12, you actually didn't forget what the priest told you. And I mean, at 12 years old, I mean, somebody says to you about purpose. Everybody has a purpose. The average 12-year-old would think, yeah, my purpose is to eat candy all day or something like that, or not go to school all day. And you remember that. So it resonated with you even at that age.
Yeah.
So no wonder you're so deep now. You started so young.
Well, I think that many of us get these little pieces along the way in life, but maybe we're not taking it in. Maybe we're not paying attention. Maybe we don't have the support around us. Maybe we don't have the environment. And then something happens in our life where, you know, some of us do have wake-up calls. You know, more than one of them actually get hit on the head a few times, you know, where we then again make choices. And so, you know, I had a situation, you know, when I was around 30, I was in massage therapist. I had a multidisciplinary holistic center I had opened up. And the the concept and the mission was for that place to be a safe and sacred place for people to do their healing with no judgment. And I was working on somebody that came to me, and I, to this day, just believe, and we're talking 32 years later, I still believe she was an angel of divine intervention. She came to me for some issues in her jaw, and so I was treating and working with her. And my center had other practitioners that I rented space to, and one was a chiropractor that would come in with his staff. And one day this woman, you know, was done with her session and she left, and I went up to check her out, and then she walked out, and the receptionist of the chiropractor asked me a question. Now, you have to realize I made a choice way back then not to read the news and not to watch the news or anything negative. That was the choice I made to keep my frequency and vibration higher in life. And so she said to me, you know, in a very wicked voice, you know, do you know who you're working on? And I know the person as they present themselves to me. That's all I need to know. And she said, well, don't you watch the news? And I said, no. She says, don't you read the paper? I said, no. And then she was about to tell me something that I have to admit, for like a couple of seconds being a mom, there was a judgment. But I took a deep breath in, and when I did, it took me back to that moment when I was 12 years old. And so she says to me, this woman murdered her child. And so I was like, whoa. And then I looked at her, and I said, and who made you judge? And God. And I walked away. And when I came out after treating my next client, she had turned my staff against me because they felt I was working on a murderess. And so I called a staff meeting, and they began to air their feelings and opinions, and I began to talk to them about the mission and purpose we had in that place. Only back then, you know, I was still young, and I had a little sassy New York attitudes as well. And I also told them, there's three doors in this place. Pick one and leave if you don't like it. And they all looked at me and they said, what? Are you firing us? And I said, no, I'm giving you a choice. And so after we discussed it, they realized that, you know, we had done a lot of wonderful work there working with cancer patients and AIDS patients and so forth. So why not work with somebody else that needs some, you know, deep healing here during this time in her life? And so for the next 7 months, I worked with this woman, and it was really awful to see what the media did to her and her family. And it just keeps reminding me that, you know, even now, look what media does to all of us and our planet and the fighting and the discord and the separation and the divide and all that that happens. And so long story short, she was convicted, even though it was all hearsay, okay? And what I mean by that is, how many moms are out there and have you ever yelled at your child? And so a neighbor heard her yelling at her son to come in for dinner multiple times. And I'm a mom. I've yelled at my kids. I don't know about the rest of you out there, but these days, you know, our patience gets short. And so the circumstantial evidence was the woman over the fence on the other side heard her hit her son, when in fact this five-year-old turned around after being called multiple times. He slipped and fell. And she had adopted two children, paid a lot of money, her and her husband. They were military, you know, service people. And they got these kids from Korea. And what they never told her was the child had had an aneurysm. So when he hit the patio, he obviously burst that aneurysm. But it didn't matter because the woman heard her, she thought, heard her slap him and hit him down. And so it was interesting, you know, the whole process. And there's not a cell in my body that believes that she murdered that child. There is not a cell. I spent 7 months with her. And Sage, on the last day before she was going to a woman's prison, she thanked me, and she was crying, and she told me that prior to working there, she had not had a very spiritually oriented life, and that she would come in earlier to read books about angels and faith and, you know, all these different things and how it helped her. And she knew that she can go into the woman's prison now, being able to teach them something, you know, so that they have hope. And you know, that was pretty profound, you know. So she was going in with a sense of peace despite her whole world being torn apart. And then I thanked her. And to this day, I remember how she looked up at me, like shocked, like, why am I thanking her? And I said, because you, my friend, have taught me unconditional love. And she started to cry. And she said, you mean we both got something good out of this? And again, I went back to that stage of 12 years old when that priest talked to me about why people come into our lives.
What a beautiful story. And I was going to say to you that you carried the wisdom around with you in your heart, in your spirit all that time, and it took that moment for it to actually manifest, for you to actually realize what the priest said to you all those years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. So you were correct when you say you were spiritual ever since you were a child. I mean, in the book, it talks about that. And, I mean, I just see how you, I can just close my eyes now and see you in that role that you played at that moment, because I know how compassionate you are, and your spirituality is palpable. I mean, anybody who comes into contact with you, whether they're listening to your Facebook Live videos or whether they're reading your books or just being in conversation with you, you talk about your vibration. I mean, you can actually feel it. I mean, I feel it. You have touched my life deeply. I'm very, very honored and grateful to have met you, because I've already learned so much from you, and I'm going to keep learning from you and hope that, you know, we get to do some work together. That would be amazing. And
I think we will be doing something really powerful together, girlfriend.
Yes, we're definitely on the same page. Another compelling, just heart-wrenching story was the one that you tell in the book about the death of your second husband. Would you like to tell the audience about that?
Yeah. I had been single for about 10 years after my first marriage and divorce and raising my children on my own, literally on my own, while I was building my business. And again, divine intervention brought a man into my life that I had met actually previously when I worked for a doctor many years prior. And I didn't really know why at the time. But eventually we both realized there was something there. There was a connection. And he came over to my holistic center, and I really wasn't interested in a relationship at the time. So I figured it was about work and helping him get started in his business. He was a hypnotherapist or a linguistic programming and a meditation speaker, in addition to being a respiratory therapist, going to school to be a psychologist. And so we wound up going to dinner one night to discuss some of the work that he could do. But we both knew there was something else there. And I had been journaling for years, 3 years, about a partner that was coming to me. And I knew so much about this person already, okay, and detail. And then we decided to go for dinner a second time. And he went to reach out for my hand, and I pulled back. And he said, why did you do that? And I said, because I'm not ready. And he said, it's because you know, right? And it was like, how did he know that I knew? And
right.
So we began to talk about that. We've had a very, very deep connection even after his passing. And we decided in that moment, even though we weren't like technically dating or anything, he said, I would love to have a healthy relationship in life, and I would love to do that with you. Would you be open and willing to going to relationship counseling to learn how to communicate better? And I was like ecstatic, yes. So we wound up actually developing our relationship through all of that, you know, and working together. And we had put on a big Body, Mind, Spirit Expo where we did an amazing relationship workshop a couple of years later. And going into our fourth year, we decided to get married. And it was my dream wedding. You know, it was the one on the beach, and all the women were dressed like goddesses, and we had a harpist and drummers. And it was just really great. It really was. It brings back some really fond memories. Well, we both made specific marriage vows, and as a minister who has, you know, performed a lot of weddings, the first wedding I ever did, it really made me understand the capacity of our words to each other, and it blew me away, you know. And so here we had made our vows to not only to each other but to ourselves, and mine was to make more time in my life for relationships, because I was pretty much a workaholic. And he was addicted to narcotic painkillers from multiple car accidents, OxyContin. And he had been in and out of rehab, you know, trying to get off the stuff. And he would do okay for a while. But I had come to learn that that drug creates a new neuro pathway, that it's, you know, it's nearly impossible to get off of it, you know. And so anyway, we had built a house. We were excited. We just moved into it. It was right before Christmas. We decided we were going to have Christmas in our home. And he was finishing school. He was pulling straight A's. Everything looked perfect. My business was growing. Everything that I had set down as goals had manifested. Life looked really good. And it was about 2 weeks before Christmas, and things started to get a little off kilter. And, you know, you kind of, through, you know, sometimes you just make excuses and say, well, we're tired. We just moved, you know. He's in school taking exams. I'm making big decisions about my business. And so we chuck things off. You know, it's stress. You know, it's just life. But it was very intense in those 2 weeks. And one evening, he didn't feel good. And it was a few nights before Christmas. We had gone shopping that morning, and we bought this beautiful angel to put by the front door. We had a really great day, but that evening he wasn't feeling good. And so I drew a bath for him so he can soak in some sea salt, and he got very agitated, so I put him to bed with some meditation tape. And he thought he had the flu, maybe, you know. And then the next morning he woke up and he was even more agitated. That night he had horrible, horrible, violent dreams. And he was not himself. And I didn't really know what was going on, because I didn't know who this man was in front of me. He never had a temper. He was always soft-spoken and kind. And he was getting really loud and nasty. And so I got kind of scared and walked away, ran away actually, down the kitchen and went back to scrubbing my floors. And he began to stumble down the stairs and he was throwing things. And, you know, it triggered a memory of my dad when he was, you know, drinking too much when I was younger and throwing things in the house. And so I kind of went in shock, you know, and just sat there. I was stunned. And so he reached for his keys. He fell over me a little bit. And then he walked to the door. And this is going to sound a little strange, but I'm going to put it out there, because maybe some of you have experienced things like this and you doubt yourself and you wonder, is this really true? You know, he stood by the door and his physical body was headed out the door. But then there was an energy that turned around with a face. And he used to tell me that, you know, he felt like his addiction was a demon. And it was like this demon turned around and looked at me and said, now watch me, you know, like testing me. And I was still stunned, just sitting on the floor. And his foot began to kick the angel that was so special to me all over the place. And that charged me and electrified me and angered me. Well, that was the last day that I saw my husband. He was missing the entire week of Christmas. We got no help from the local police and my students and friends. We searched everywhere for him. I hadn't slept at all while we were looking for him. And so my awareness was heightening even more and more and more, being in that altered state of consciousness. And one night he came to me and I began to talk to him and tried to find out where he was. And it was actually the evening that he was beginning to fail, you know. And so sometimes, you know, there are people out there that we have these connections with our loved one. We can tune in. We can know something is wrong with them. But sometimes we trust it, right? We just say, oh, no, but, you know, but it's real. You know, when you have that deep connection with people, you can feel things. And so, needless to say, we got notice a few days later that they found his vehicle and then found his body covered underneath snow because we had had a very bad snowstorm. And it was a few days after Christmas. And they sent a rookie policeman to tell me that they found him. And we were only married 6 months to the day. And I remember pounding my hand on the kitchen cabinet so hard, I'm surprised they didn't break it. I remember blacking out with my scream. And then I remember, you know, probably saying a few cuss words in there, I'm sure, you know, and coming back, you know, to my awareness and apologizing to the rookie policeman. He's like, no, ma'am, no, ma'am, you know, you have nothing to apologize for. And it was all surreal, you know. It was like you had this Cinderella story, and then all of a sudden, you know, the rug got pulled out underneath in your life. And I never experienced depression stage in my life. I was always somebody that, you know, stayed pretty upbeat or found her way out of, you know, those moments, you know, pretty quickly. But I have to tell you, this was one of the most incredible life experiences I was about to go through. And I managed to get through all this in a very numb state, and anybody that's lost any loved one knows that you're pretty numb, you know, through the whole process of funerals and stuff and people coming up to you, and it kind of sets in later on, you know. And he used to come to me and speak to me. He used to, you know, magically move things around in the house sometimes to let me know he was there. He would show up in dreams and just look so peaceful. You know, but I had a hard time, and I was severely, severely depressed for a very long time, and going to take us probably into your next question, isn't it?
Yeah, because, you know, I was actually kind of in a trance just listening to you now, just imagining what that would be like, and having him missing like that, and having... you know, experiencing and feeling his presence, even though he was gone. What was it like while he was missing, though? I mean, was it worse while he was missing or after you found out that he had actually passed? Because sometimes the worrying is worse than the actual reality of the situation.
It was all really bad in different ways. Okay?
In different ways.
In different ways. The shock of him being missing, and you know, when I realized the next day he hadn't come home, and I knew something was wrong. I mean, I knew it. It wasn't just, you know, I'm, you know, angry right now and I'm kind of home, honey. You know, I knew because it was not in his personality. And because I'm extremely intuitive, I knew prior to all of this that he was going to die. I just didn't know when.
Right.
And so I, you know, that started to kick up my senses a little bit more, even though I didn't want to focus on that happening. I wanted him home safely, obviously. But it was tormenting because, you know, you're searching, you don't know where you're searching. You have people putting up flyers. You're looking at every person that has similar features. It's really, I don't wish it on anybody, and anybody that has gone through it out there knows that it's tormenting, you know, and you can't sleep. You know, you can't sleep. I had one friend of mine. She was a former student of mine. She'd call me up every hour. You know, I checked here. He's not there. And I would say, please go home. Please, I'm not going home. He helped me in my life. He helped me this and that. I have to find him for you. You know, and it was wonderful. But, you know, it was so stressful too, you know. And you just want peace at that point. You want to know, you know, what's the outcome here? What do I have to deal with? And because I was open to communicating with him, you know, that kind of made it a challenge too. There were moments, Sage, that I thought, am I going crazy? You know, am I really hearing this? And I specifically recall one night, and I'm not sure if it's in the story or not, in the book, but I specifically recall one night my daughter was like, Mom, just go soak in the tub, you know. And I didn't want to because that was where he was. Remember, that's where I did a salt bath for him the night before. But I did. I went up there. And it was about 11 p.m. at night, and my son wasn't living in that state at the time, and he didn't have a phone, so he didn't know this was all going on either. And I throw that in there because you'll see why in a moment. And so I began to just cry and pray and reach out to him, and I began to feel him and hear him. And I was like, "Where are you?" And he goes, "I don't know. I can't see." And I said, "Well, what's the last thing you saw?" And he goes, "A pole." And I go, "Come on, give me something more than a pole, you know?"
Yeah.
And, you know, I was asking him how he was feeling, and he says, "I'm so cold, and I can't breathe." And I remember saying to him, "Imagine my arms like the wings of an angel wrapped around you to keep you warm. Imagine my breath is your breath breathing with you." And so, you know, I spent this time with him, and I think it was somewhere about a half an hour or so, and I began to feel him fading, not dying just yet, but fading. And when I came out of this state, I thought, oh, this can't be real, right? You start to doubt yourself when things like this happen. And it was about midnight by now. And I said to God, well, if this is real, then my son is going to call me. Now, remember, he had no phone. He was in a different state, and it's midnight. And what do you think happens? The phone rings,
yes.
And it's my son. And he says, "Mom, I just heard, and I'm coming home." So, you know, the instantaneous validation just blew me away. And so that part of it was a challenge because of the openness I had. And then you go into the next segment of it, the reality, you know, you find out you're numb. You're numb for a while. You know, you're in that denial space, right? And then is the process of the healing, you know, where the anger comes up, all of that stuff. You know, there's so many emotions when somebody loses somebody. And,
yes.
And while I had lost a lot of people in my life, I'm no stranger to losing, you know, relatives and stuff in my life. This was different. And this opened me up to an entirely new gateway of my life when you asked about, you know, my spirituality, because this was the catalyst that now was going to catapult me into a whole new perception because of literally having nervous breakdowns multiple over the couple of years. Having a different way of functioning in my brain. You know, I used to be very methodical, you know, overachiever in everything, workaholic, never made time for anything, didn't go with the flow. And now it's like it's go with the flow because that's what you got, you know. I had to learn who I was. I realized that the agreement for us to come together to heal so that I can have more time for myself and that he could be healed and not be on narcotic pills anymore by the end of the year. That was his vow. It happened. And this is why, you know, even in my book, I talk about, you know, creating clarity in what you write in your statements or what you say when you think, because you don't know how it's going to play out.
Exactly.
And, it, you know, it's been quite the journey, and it's brought me here today. And I, you know, I've thanked him a gazillion times, you know, for passing over, and people say, well, then you didn't really love him. No, he loved me tremendously, and I love him for all that he teaches me all the time.
Wow, that's just truly, that's just amazing. And why you went to Egypt? I told you your story reminds me of Eat, Pray, Love. Because the parallels and the similarities in your life experiences is just so uncanny in a lot of ways. So it's you know, I know you went through the depression and all of that, and is that what made you want to go to Egypt? You said
well,
it was you felt like it was a calling that you needed to just go there.
Okay, well, with Egypt, actually, I always wanted to go to Egypt since childhood, Egypt and Hawaii, by the way, and I had actually booked that trip to Egypt 3 years prior, and I actually had booked it for both of us, and when I came home, he had said to me, "I don't think I'm going to be able to go," and I'm like, "What are you talking about? It's 3 years from now. What do you mean you're not going to be able to go?" So see the inkling already, the intuitiveness, okay, the connections. And I was like, well, come on, we got plenty of time to pay for it. And he was like, nope, I just don't think I can go. Now, why does somebody say something like that, right? And so anyway, he said, take the deposit and put it all on yours. And if something changes, then I will come. And so the trip was booked for the end of January 1999, and he died December 1998, 1 month before the trip. And so I'm laying in my bed. I'm not getting out, you know, of bed to function on any level. My daughter would bring me green drinks and Bach flower remedies to get through the day. And I wasn't going to go. I was in no place to go. I don't even know how I got to the airport. I don't even know how I got on the plane. I have no recollection at all. I remember was standing on the veranda at the hotel looking at the sunset coming down behind the pyramids, and it was so surreal. I was like, am I here or am I dreaming? And I look back upon it, and on my website I have several stories about this Egypt journey on my blog, if anybody's interested, about the mystical and magical experiences I had, because I look back at wanting to go there since I was a child, okay? The timing of it, you know, 3 years prior, okay, booking this to be timed 1 month after his death, when I'm in no state of mind to travel, okay? But it was divinely orchestrated because my consciousness was entirely different. And I was experiencing life there and death there, the perception of death, totally different. And, you know, if you study anything about Egyptian mythology, you know, they work with that, the underworld, with the spirit world and all that. And so I got to experience things I would have experienced had I gone there under any other circumstances. I began to realize how thin the veil was. I was walking through time and space differently than other people. I realized after a few days, the majority of people didn't see me, and at first I didn't understand why. And then I said something to my roommate, and she began to notice it. I was able to shift into, I don't know if you want to call it another time zone or dimension, but I, you know, you were told not to leave your group, and all of a sudden I'd be walking away, and there would be an Egyptian that would show up, you know, and take me into different places, and then I would come back and show up with the group, and no one would know I was gone, and yet my roommate would try it, and she'd get yelled at 30 seconds. So, like, how did all this happen? How did I get to see these things? How did I get to experience these things? And then, you know, there was an experience at the Valley of the Kings, you know, and I'm not sure if I put it in the book, but I know it's in my blog, about being called to this one section, this one tomb where we weren't supposed to go, but I'm being called up there. And there's a big sign up there, and I'm reading it about being the most magnificent, you know, tomb, the largest tomb. And I started to chuckle. I said to my husband, you stinker, you told me you were going to get here somehow. This is you, isn't it? You know, like if you believe in past lives or something, you know. It was like all of a sudden I had this sense he was there. And out of nowhere, Sage, I kid you not, over a sand dune comes this little Egyptian guy. I got key. That's all he could say. I got key. And he opens this gate, and for like a split second or two, like I was like, I ain't going in there. And something's like pushes me. Yes, you are. You're safe. And so I'm walking in there. I don't understand his language, but I understand it. I know what he's saying to me about all the art on the walls, all the gods and goddesses. I understand him. Like, how's that possible, right? And it felt like we were walking for miles and miles and miles. And then we get to this one area where there's like this huge, huge pit with this ladder. And he's like, you know, waving me to come down. And I'm thinking, I ain't going down there with him. And something pushes me again to go. So I start climbing down this rickety ladder. And we enter the sarcophagus, you know, of the king that, you know, was buried there. And it was the most magnificent tomb. It really was. And the whole space was just beautiful, you know, where each family member had their little space where they had buried them. And then all of a sudden I felt like it was time to go. And I heard to bury my husband's wedding ring in this tomb. And I'm thinking, I'm not ready. This is only 1 month. I'm not ready to let go of this symbolically or any other way, you know. And so anyway, we leave. And although it felt like we walked miles to get in, it felt like seconds to get out. The ring did get buried there he left. He disappeared as magically as he appeared, and I heard from the heavens as tears were falling down my face, like God was speaking from the clouds, it's time to move on. It's time to move forward now. And I'm thinking, I can't, it's only 30 days, but I ran down the hill, and everybody's getting on the bus, and nobody even knew I was gone. And so Egypt brought me into another level of consciousness to show me things beyond what our eyes can physically see. And it was there that I had a dream about Peru, to go to Peru on a missionary trip. And I'm thinking, I don't want to go to Peru. It's not on my bucket list. But this is how life lines up. You know, if we pay attention, life shows us all these things. And yes, audience, I did go to Peru 3 years later.
And all of these experiences have, as you say in your book, have put you on this unique spiritual path and has really, really given you, I mean, you say that you have a soul purpose now.
Mm-hmm.
And you went through all of this to find yourself.
Yep.
So
you know,
before
we get started,
I'm going to see if anybody, I'm going to let the callers know. Okay, I'm going to open the lines in a few minutes. And in case somebody wants to ask Gloria a question or comment. So in about 2 minutes, I will open up the phone line. So go ahead, continue, Gloria.
Okay. Well, you talked about a soul purpose. Everybody has a soul purpose. You know, we're all brought here, number one, to love, okay? But we each have a unique purpose and gift. And many of us know that there's something, you know, deep down inside, but we don't always know exactly what, or we doubt ourselves, or we don't have enough belief in it. But everybody has a soul purpose. Everybody.
Well, you know, one of the things that, that's different about us as opposed to the ancients is that we do not use one of our senses, and that's our sixth sense. And it looks like yours is more developed and more active than others. That's why you were able to sense your husband when he was gone and all of the visions you had in Egypt and then Peru and the other things that you describe in your book and the things that you said tonight. You have a more active sixth sense. And see, the ancients, they relied on the sixth sense. That's what they needed to survive. I mean, but as, you know, in modern times, we don't use our sixth sense anymore because we don't need it. We don't need to be able to sense or whether an animal is approaching that's going to eat us for dinner. That's what the sixth sense and all those things, you know, was used for those purposes. So now we don't need it. You know, we're modern, we're civilized. We don't need to use that. So with most of us, it has atrophied. You know, it just is lying dormant within us. But that's really the seat of our soul. You know,
yeah.
That is our soul, the sixth
and
sense.
Say,
but that's
the
doorway to it.
We actually need it more now than ever because, like you said, it's atrophied. You know, we've shut it down. We're not paying attention to it. We don't honor
it.
We
ignore it most of the time. We get this intuition.
Mm-hmm.
We get these feelings, and then we dismiss it because we're not used to relying on it.
Right.
And so we don't need six senses in our, you know, in our modern times. We only need five. And that's why the sixth sense is lying dormant in us, because we don't need it to survive. So that's, but the ancients, that was the number one sense. They needed that more than sight, sound, touch, taste, and hearing. That was what their survival was based on, and it's the total opposite with us. So let's see if anyone wants to say something to Gloria. Okay, area code 908, would you like to say something? area code 702. Would you like to comment or say have a question for Gloria?
Do they have to area. Unmute or anything?
The producer will do it. Yeah.
Okay.
Area code 215. Comment or question for Gloria? Okay, well, it looks like the callers just want to listen. So, Gloria, again, I mean, there's so much that you have to say and offer. So, as a clarity coach, what do you notice most with your clients that limit them? What is it that you teach your clients?
Okay. Well, what I find is most people lack the confidence and belief in themselves that there is greatness within them because of whatever belief systems, whatever things have happened in their life where they were told they're not good enough, they're losers, you know, they're stupid, whatever it was, okay? And so that's one of the things that we usually work with on breaking through and getting rid of those voices, those belief systems in the sense of, and not necessarily even getting rid of them because they're a part of us, but working with them, assuring them, building this confidence and strength with them. For example, if we're hearing something in our head, which we do every day, we're talking. I was listening to one of my mentors today, and you know, she was saying, you know, we spend about 90% of our day talking to ourselves in our head, you know, and we do. You know, we're analyzing things, we're judging things, we're talking ourselves in or out of things, and what I work with people in coaching is that when these belief systems come up, when the doubt about yourself comes up, the fear, you know, is a part of ourselves from a long time ago. And how can we work with that part of ourselves, you know, because it is ingrained. It is part of who we are. But how can we assure it? How can we get the strength of that part of ourselves that, in fact, has helped us survive, okay? But now communicate with it in a different way where you are from a more powerful and empowered adult and work together if you can. And you're going to laugh at me, but one of the things that I did when I was doing some of my own personal work, and I had this really, really loud voice in my head about 2 years ago. It just popped up all over the place. And I was like, oh, my gosh, like, shut up, you know, and it just wouldn't quiet down. So I gave it like an image, and I made it sit on my shoulder, and, you know, so when it would come up, I would, like, talk to it, and people would probably think, this lady is crazy, right? But, you know, I had to do this in my mind's eye, obviously. And when it was so loud and obnoxious and I couldn't work with it, I began to flick it off my shoulder, like symbolically flicking it off, because it made me aware of what I was aware of in my thoughts. And if I wanted to get those things out of my thoughts, those distractions out of my thoughts, and put myself back on track, I would literally flick my shoulder. So it was like some people put rubber bands on their wrist and snap it. I was flicking my shoulder. And I realized after...
I have to try that one.
It works. I'm telling you, it really works. I realized after a few weeks I wasn't flicking my shoulder as much. You know, I was aware now, but it was quieter. And then I began to, you know, just have this conversation with this part of myself and say, you know, you're pretty strong. That's pretty cool. Like, you got like this warrior goddess energy. And all of a sudden you could feel it like coming up inside and you say, yeah, that's me, right? And I had to find a conversation, a way to communicate with this older part of me to say, listen, this is what I'm working on. You've got strengths that I don't have, and I have insights you don't have. Can we work together? Because if not, you need to step aside for a while and leave me alone. And I began to realize over the course of 2 years that it began to work with me. And eventually I realized just recently, about a month or so ago, that this part of me was actually my little girl that you know, just had so many different disappointments in life, and she wasn't going to let anything or anybody hurt me again. So she was always going to stop me, right? And I decided to go take dance lessons and push my physical body after an injury to dance. And one day my dance instructor came up to me when he challenged me to do this this performance within a month, and I was like, oh boy. But I did it. And then he came over and was talking to me about, you know, getting dressed for the event, wearing makeup and heels, and that's really not who I am. I'm very casual. But my little, that little voice in me, that little part of my life, she all of a sudden perks up and she goes, oh, my God, we could wear a dress. We could wear heels. And I felt her inside of me, and I thought, she's happy. She just needed to be happy. And so that's really what I work with people, find that happy part. But here's the thing, it's not always the easiest thing is people resist. And so, you know, being aware of these thoughts, that's why the flicking really helped me, can help us shift, you know, from those distractions. And some people are ready to do it. Some people, you know, they still have their reasons why, their excuses, their delay triggers and all of that. And they'll decide in their own time, you know, hopefully to open up to their greatness, because we all have it.
Yes, we do. And what is your soul purpose? This is what you talk about in the book. What is your soul purpose? How would you describe your soul purpose, and how did you find it? Many people want to know their soul purpose, and they want to know, how do I find my soul purpose? So,
okay. Well, you know, it's not really the career or job that we take. Some people think that's your soul purpose. Now, we may be attracted to certain kinds of things that we enjoy, and that kind of gives us a little hint, okay? And so, obviously, I love to help people. My mother used to even say, you know, what do you do? Wear a sign on the back of you that brings home every stray cat, you know? But as I, you know, went through life, you know, and I was a massage therapist and had a holistic center, you know, and I'm a minister and, you know, I'm a coach. I'm helping people. But what I realized was when I was studying with shaman and kahuna, and specifically the kahuna, I realized there was something greater and more specific on those paths and the work that I did. Meanwhile, to get it, and there's a lot of Hawaiian terms. And one day, all of a sudden, as I began to, you know, be in my meditative place to put in all these pieces and listen, because you got to listen, you know, I heard the word pono. And pono has many meanings. It's spelled P-O-N-O. It means if it is good, if it is righteous, if it is moral, if it is kind, if it is caring, you see? So it's like all these words, okay? And if it's in balance. And my work is really around all of that. It's around putting those things in that truthful place, okay? The word, is, it means truth, okay? But what is the truth? And so that has been, you know, the journey to see the perception of what truth is, you know, for me, for others, and all, for this world. And so if it is right, if it is kind, if it is caring, if it is righteous, if it is truth, I'm living my purpose.
Beautiful. Wonderful. And I know you have a free giveaway, and I don't want to forget to tell the audience that you have a special giveaway just for the audience tonight. And it's at www.GloriaCoppola.com/purpose. GloriaCoppola.com/purpose. You all could get this wonderful book, which I call my brand new Bible.
Well, they're not going to get the book. That's not the book, okay?
Oh, what is it they're getting?
Okay. What that is an excerpt from the book, okay?
Oh, well, the excerpt is going to be just as good.
And there is some little lessons in there that if you follow, you know, and you do them, they do really touch deeply within your soul, you know. And there's also a video there that I made that I use in my coaching program that I decided to share with you all. So I hope that you actually open your gift and use your gift, because hopefully it will ignite something in you and your purpose. And so if you're wondering how to spell my last name, it is C-O-P as in Paul, P again, O-L-A. So it's GloriaCoppola.com/purpose. And that'll be up there for you to go grab it for free.
I am definitely going to go get my free gift. I am doing that for sure. So as we close, Gloria, tonight, what are you up to? What's your future look like? What's God calling you to do? What's this great thing you're up to?
I know, girl, it's something. I had no idea. Okay, I had no idea my life was going to open up to this next stage. I'll be honest with every one of you. I've always known there were great things. I always knew that God wanted me to help children. I've done things at different levels. And because I have listened astutely, I mean, really, I have humbled myself tremendously in the last year. I have minimalized on things. I have a symbol that I painted that every time I look at it when I'm doubtful or scared, I keep hearing God say, stay on your path, stay on your path. And opportunities keep opening every time I listen. I can rationalize and say, no, you shouldn't be doing that right now because of, there's that voice, right? And then I hear, go. Go because a veil will be lifted. I will open another opportunity. Well, Sage, there's been some amazing people that have come in my life. There's a woman who is releasing her publishing company soon, and she put me in touch with a branding coach that works with some very top spiritual writers. And they are grooming me, branding me, stretching me fuller into my purpose. And I have to tell you, it's bringing up a little shaky stuff for me, because there's a book in the making called Born From Love. And if you remember earlier in the conversation when I talked with that priest about all the things that happen in this world, how could these people be born from love? But everybody is. Everybody is. And every experience is around that, you know, to be more unconditionally loving. And so then I was talking with the branding coach, and he says, do you have a purpose or a mission? And I told him how much it meant to me to work with children, and that I do have one organization, the smile organization to help children get their smiles back that were born with cleft lips. But I knew there was something greater, and I went into prayer with him. I went into meditation, and I heard God tell me the bigger purpose is to contribute and help stop human trafficking, because children are being bred for sex trafficking. And that has got to end. And so my mission through this book and fundraisers down the road, and hopefully you and I are going to do a big conference together with some other people to make all these wonderful things happen and raise the consciousness on this planet and shift these frequencies from separation and divide into love and help heal, you know, this pain that many are suffering with. It's time. And so this is what I'm working on and towards. I'm going to ask you all for prayers and support, because it is controversial. You know, even the book, the concept of some of the things that I have written for 40 years that, you know, some people could say, oh, my God, you know, this and that and the judgments and stuff. And I have to put all those voices aside and know that all my writings that have been coming through me in my prayer, the gifts that God has been giving me in my prayer, it is pono. It is totally pono. It is totally truth. And it's time to put it out there in the world. And you all are the first ones to hear me say this publicly. And that's kind of pretty, like, scary and exciting all at the same time.
I am honored. And I love, I actually took I got certified in the Ho'oponopono course. Yeah, so I'm you know, we're on the same page, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gloria, I thank you so much. We're right at the bottom of the show, and I thank you with all of my heart and soul that you came on tonight to just bless everyone in earshot of everything you said tonight. Your story, your work, you know, just your entire being is just phenomenal. And I thank you so much. And I do look forward to us working together, you know, with other wonderful women collectively to bring some really wonderful, you know, gifts to people. So thank you, thank you, thank you, Gloria. And everybody, again, it's Gloria Coppola, coppola.com/purpose. Please go there and get your free gift. It'll be one of the best gifts you've ever gotten. I'm going to get mine, that's for sure. Gloria, thank you so much.
Thank you, and thank everybody that listened to this. And may you be divinely guided to your purpose and blessed each step of the way.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening to the show tonight. Have a pleasant evening. Namaste.